This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. I appreciate your inviting me today.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. And, you know, Dave, I know, and we'll get right into it. And so, you know, Dave, I know you had a long and distinguished career in public service before joining Booz Allen Hamilton. Can you talk a little bit about what you did in government?
Sure. I left government. I retired from government about 10 years ago after spending 33 years at the IRS. And during that time, spent about half of my career in the IRS field offices and half in headquarters, and then the last 10 years with Booz Allen Hamilton. And, you know, Roger, when I sort of think about those 40-plus years, I've had a lot of opportunities, both in the government and now outside, helping the government find ways to deliver services to citizens in a much more effective and efficient way. And I'm glad to be here this afternoon to talk a little bit about some of those experiences.
Well, you mentioned you started at Booz Allen about 10 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, and can you talk a little bit about what your practice is focused on?
At Booz Allen right now, I'm basically focused on all of the federal financial regulators. These are the organizations like the Securities and Exchange Commission, the FDIC, the OCC, all of the agencies that were impacted 3 years ago with the passages of the Dodd-Frank reform bill. And as you can imagine, what you read in the paper about all of the changes that were embodied in that legislation, we've been busy helping a lot of those agencies adjust to the changes in how they oversee now those regulated institutions. I've also had an opportunity to spend some time working in the early days of the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. Have had an opportunity to actually work internationally with some foreign tax agencies. So it's been a really diverse set of opportunities.
Right. So that's interesting. In working with those financial regulatory bodies, I'm just in responding to the changes in the laws. And how they reacted. Is it a thing where you help them work through how do we reorganize to be able to perform some of the new things we're being asked to do, or how do we best organize for efficiency? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a variety. I mean, three new organizations were created as a result of Dodd-Frank legislation. The Office of Financial Research, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and the FSOC, which is a financial sector oversight. And all of those organizations started as brand new entities upon the passage of the legislation. And we've been involved with several of them in creating the organizational structure. For a lot of the other regulators, though, Roger, what's really interesting when you think about their roles now is their responsibility to oversee these institutions now requires them to leverage data in a way that they've never heretofore been able to. So there's a lot of interest in how do I better use my technology? How do I move services to the cloud? How do I ingest and analyze data in a much more real-time basis?
Right. So, because the results need to be real time, right?
Right. I mean, when you think about, for example, Securities and Exchange Commission, and they have, you know, added responsibility. Well, you know, they're overseeing the financial markets, and, you know, that happens at the speed of light.
Right. Yeah. So, and I know one of the things, and we sort of go back a little bit ways that
we do.
When I was working at GSA, you helped us with regard to some of the reorganization where the Federal Supply Service and the Federal Technology Service were sort of negotiating, I put it kindly,
right,
the merger of the two into the Federal Acquisition Service. And, you know, I'd be interested, you know, not necessarily, and we could use that as an example, just some of those concerns where you're taking an organization that's made up of several different places and trying to reorganized. One things we experience, as you know, like some cultural issues and just, you know, organizational bias. Are those some of the things that you deal with?
Since you lived through you were on the receiving end of our consulting as part of the creation of the Federal Acquisition Service. And, you know, we successfully won that competitive procurement. And part of what I brought to that engagement, I think, was a similar set of experiences that I had had back in the late 1990s at the IRS, where we basically, at that time under Commissioner Charles Rosati, basically changed the way we did tax administration. In the past, it was a regional and district structure, and we basically moved into four lines of business. And in the case of the IRS, we actually eliminated all of those entities and brought and consolidated a lot of those functions. And, you know, the experience that I had at the IRS was, yes, that cultural change issue is really significant. And so I was prepared in arriving at the GSA to say, yep, we're going to have the same kinds of issues. And it's not, and I saw this at DHS in the early days as well, Roger, it's not about people not wanting to do the right thing or the new thing. I think it's just human nature where people are going like, you know, I worked in this organization for 10 years, 20 years. I knew it. I was successful. I knew what success looked like. And now my world's about to change. And, you know, there's a high degree of anxiety.
Right. It's a fear of the unknown. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Fear of the unknown.
Right.
And I think the other thing, too, is sometimes we get a little bit caught up in sort of looking internally and saying, well, how is this going to affect me, whether it's the IRS or the GSA in the case of the creation of the Federal Acquisition Services. What it's really about is our customers. You know, our concerns, quite candidly, should be secondary to how do I improve my organization to better perform for my customers, whether they're taxpayers or whether they're other agencies or contractors that are supported by the Federal Acquisition Service.
Right, and I wanted to get your thoughts real quick here on in this segment, because one of the reasons that, you know, FTS and FSS were merging is there's issues of duplication within the organization. And, and GSA, to take it as a whole, is a shared services model and providing platforms for people to accomplish their missions by acquiring, you know, the necessary products and services. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, shared services and what it potentially means or what the opportunities there with regard to eliminating duplication? There's a lot of focus. You know, the president's talked a lot about eliminating unnecessary duplication. GAO has done studies on it recently. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I actually probably one of the fanatics around town around shared services. And it actually goes back to my days at the IRS when we had this regional and district study. And at that time, when I joined the IRS, there were 7 regions, there were 63 districts, there were 10 processing centers, there were multiple computing centers. And what was interesting is when you looked at the sort of administrative functions, whether it's procurement, whether it's HR, finance, logistics, facilities, we were delivering all of those functions in more than 120 locations. And we weren't being consistent and we weren't being efficient. You know, this. If you were an employee in the old Burlington district of IRS, your service that you received was very different than, let's say, in Manhattan, where there were 5,000 employees. And I think what's happened over the last 30 years, especially with the advent of technologies and ERP systems, you don't need as many people, and you don't need to do it in a distributed way. You can do it in a more consolidated, central way. And that was my beginning in the sort of interest that I've had and a passion now about helping organizations drive that cost down so that you can take those dollars and actually put them in frontline operations.
Right. It's fair to say, get your thought on this, is that, you know, the government really hasn't harnessed the potential of technology to create efficiencies and eliminate that duplication, is it?
You know, I think Roger, some departments have done it, and I think that there has been some success in cross-servicing. I think there's been, over the last 10 to 12 years, some successes, let's say, in the lines of business that OMB and GSA mm-hmm. have cooperated on. I think part of the challenge is resources. Part of the challenge, let's say, in the financial LOB, the FM LOB, is you've got all of these different diverse legacy systems. And as you and I both know, you know, making that transition from some of those archaic legacy systems into a modern ERP is rather expensive, and it takes time.
Yes, and painful.
And who's going to pay for it?
Right, exactly. Great point. And, you know, Dave, we do have to take a break, but my guest today is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton, and when we come back, we're going to switch to a little bit, talk about acquisition planning and some of the key foundations for successful procurements. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is an important time for the federal government, a chance for agencies to do things differently. How will you help shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, and turn resolve into results, so you can see what's possible and make it happen. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And when we took the break, Dave, we're going to segue into talking a little bit about acquisition planning and some of the important fundamentals, the importance of fundamentals in delivering, you know, best value outcomes for the, you know, for agencies and for the taxpayer and for the American people. And I know it's an area that you're quite passionate about and do a lot of work in. Let's just open it up and start with sort of the big picture. What are some of the keys to a successful acquisition?
You know, Roger, I think one of, for me, and both when I was at the IRS, but also now sitting on the other side supporting various federal clients, I think the key is actually the strategic plan of the agency. I think we really need as an organization to start with, you know, whether it's a GSA or an IRS or a component of DHS, I mean, pick the bureau. What is that mission? What are they trying to accomplish? How are they going to do it? And then what are the kinds of acquisitions that need to be made over multiple years to support the delivery of the mission? And I think unfortunately, what happens, and maybe someday you and I will be around when we'll see multi-year budgeting.
Right.
But I'm not going to hold my breath.
No.
But part of, I think, what drives some of the behavior on the part of the government is basically the annual appropriation process, and you know, that's a 1-year process, and people, I think, get sort of in a mindset that I need to get things done within 1 year. Well, you and I both know major IT system acquisitions, implementations, development takes multiple years. And I think having a strategic plan and then layering on it a multi-year acquisition plan is really the key to moving the government where personally I think we need to go. I mean, if you look back on probably any government's agency over a 10-year period, I would guess that for an agency or a department, you know, absent some change in legislation, I would bet their budget doesn't move by 10 to 15% every year.
Right.
And yet, you know, we get ourselves into this sort of acquisition mode that everything needs to be done within a 12-month period. And then when you sort of factor on continuing resolutions and you can't have new starts and sometimes you're trying to get things crammed into an 8 or 9 month period. And I think that's what drives some of the problems down the road. Some of the performance problems, some of the fact that, you know, I don't have the right requirements because I've rushed. I do think there are examples of agencies around town that actually have tried to sort of take that strategic approach, take their mission, take their strategy, overlay their acquisition plan, and then build over multiple years, what do I need to accomplish?
Right. It's almost like a modular approach to it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And you mentioned the budget process and continuing resolutions. Like, well, even this year, like with sequestration, right? We've got agencies and departments sitting there, and they haven't spent, I mean, it's going to, you know, the end of fiscal year sort of, you know, traditional buying season is, which is fast, just basically upon us now, going into the summer, is, you know, it's going to be even more challenging than in past years, because I know there are a lot of agencies who haven't, you know, they haven't had their money allocated to their program so they can actually execute because of the uncertainties even beyond the continuing resolution. At least with that, you knew where you were. You know, are you seeing that?
We haven't seen it yet, but it's only the beginning of June.
Right.
Check back with me the end of July, and I've told colleagues, it's like, if you can take your vacation, do it in June, because I suspect that August and September are going to be a little bit hectic.
And even July probably this year.
But it's interesting, Roger, is there have actually been some initiatives to move away from that. The VA, over the last couple of years has had, for some activity, a multi-year budget. That's allowed the VA to sit back and, I think, more strategically plan their acquisitions and provide both their business users as well as the vendor community a little bit more time to react and to give you the kind of service or product that you're really looking for as a government consumer.
Right, and it is. You make a great point, because it is so true that when you sit there and you have to deal with the financial constraint that's year to year, in a certain sense, right, for planning purposes, but you have a enduring mission that you must accomplish as an agency, and you want to have a strategic plan to carry that out over a series of years, you've always got that, always got that issue of I'm going to have annual appropriations, and trying to merge those two things together in an effective way. It is an extremely difficult, issue challenge for government.
Yeah, I mean, the old, the old, saying of, use it or lose it with annual leave.
Right.
I mean, the same is true with an appropriation process, right? I mean, people run up to the end of the year and they go, well, I got to spend it. Well, and that's what gets into, do we have the right requirements? Is the business customer of that procurement really involved? And that,
right.
In my experience, both in the government and outside of the government, is that's when projects seem to run into a problem, where there isn't the proper planning, where there aren't the kinds of defined requirements. There isn't necessarily the integration between the acquisition professionals and the business professionals. I mean, I've seen all too often in the government where a business need would be, defined in, a page or two. They just throw it over the fence to the acquisition. They do what they can with it, but by the time you get around procuring it, the business people go, well, that's not what I wanted. Well,
right.
But it takes time to define those requirements. And that's what I'm saying is, if you think about this more strategically, I'm probably writing requirements 3 years before I actually put out an RFI or an RFP.
Right. So time, and having the time to write, basically intelligent requirement statements, and also to be able to have those to measure the outcomes. Are there other aspects or key considerations with regard to requirements development that?
I've seen, unfortunately, over the last 20 plus years, the government move away from using RFIs. And I think that especially around some of these emerging technologies, whether it's the cloud or cyber threats, or these are evolving at such a quick rate that it's really not, I think, expected that the government knows the latest. And I think the use of the RFI tool to help refine that requirements is something that we ought to sort of bring back. It used to be in vogue. I'm not sure. And again, I think it's just because of these time constraints. People saying, I got to get all this money out in 8 months. I don't have time for an RFI. And I know in a lot of times talking to potential clients, it's like, I'll come in and talk about some of our ideas, but, my competitors have ideas too. Why don't you ask us all?
Right.
Because
right.
You're thinking about a solution probably based on a business process that probably you don't need with a new solution.
Sure.
So tell us what you're trying to accomplish, and we'll bring you a solution that will cause you to realign your business process.
Right. And that engagement with industry, sort of like the Mythbusters campaign.
Absolutely.
Is vital to requirements development. Well, Dave, we do have to take our next break. But my guest today is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of acquisition planning, the key fundamentals to successful procurements, as well as a few other procurement issues that are out there. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Shouldn't a workstation live up to its billing? If yours are no longer working, there's Initiate from the Han Company. Initiate workstations are easy to order, install, and reconfigure. Components fit precisely and provide endless ways for space planners to arrange people. Initiate is also highly sustainable, helping reduce your environmental footprint. Initiate workstations, inspired by the practical needs of the workplace. Online at han.com. That's HON.com.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And Dave, I know you've probably worked on more procurements than you'd care to count over your career. And that's one of the reasons we've been talking a little bit about acquisition planning and requirements development, that sort of thing. And, I want to get in some of your thoughts on that, you know, sort of execution. And one of the things I like to talk to people about just in my business is the acquisition team. What does it look like? I always raise the question: is it balanced? To get your insights.
Well, I think Roger, you touched on the key point of success. At least my experience in success, both as a provider, but also on the government side, and that's the word team. I think if we think about this as, again, I keep sort of harping back on the strategy. To execute that strategy, this is a team effort. You need the business owner, you need the acquisition folks, you need the CFO folks, obviously, because dollars. We need their dollars.
Right. Even if they're annual appropriations, right?
and having, as we deliver sometimes on like major technology projects with integrated teams, business consultants as well as technology consultants. I think the same holds true on the government side, that when I look at those high-performing agencies and bureaus, they're the organizations that really have got this integrated team concept down, where it's not, I'm the business owner, I write something up, I send Roger an email, Roger sort of thinks he understands what my email said, and he'll write a procurement, and then when they finally procure something, I'm sitting there going,
Roger, what have you done to me?
I think it's a couple things. One, it's, I think, because the workforce has shrunk so much over the last 10 years, so everybody's incredibly busy, but stepping back and saying, okay, on major procurements, we really need to have this integrated team. We need to have the business owners, we need to have the acquisition people, we need to have the CIO if it's a technology, because the business people are going like, well, I really would like to go do this, and then the CIO goes, yeah, but that doesn't fit in my system, that's not in my architecture. So I think I don't know what the right threshold is, but for those major projects, I think the key to success is that integration. And I think the other thing too, Roger, and I've seen this, over the years, both in and out of government now, is yes, the workforce is shrinking, but I think because of how much as a government we rely on the private sector to deliver services to the government, we ought not to be shrinking the acquisition community. I've seen that happen over time. Right. It's just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And, I think down the road that is going to cause the government to be even less efficient. Right. In that procurement process, and perhaps even less satisfied with what they get from vendors.
Right. Well, it is. It's that link between, agency mission and the support of the mission, and the procurement professionals are right in the acquisition workforce are that connection. They're that link, right? And if you shortchange them, again, it creates higher risk for contract performance, which translates potentially into higher risk for agency mission. Right,
right. Because you touched on the role of GSA, and GSA provides a vast array of products and services. You don't necessarily need to have experienced acquisition people if you're ordering copy paper, right? You can go to the schedule, you can get what you need, but you need that highly skilled acquisition professional to help you on, how am I going to move this particular function into a cloud environment? Or how am I going to protect my system through, from cyber threats? And that takes, that takes trained, experienced acquisition people working with the business professionals.
Right, and people who know acquisition, but also, they've got to be well-rounded, right? They've got to understand the industry sector or the technology, have some understanding of what they're buying. Right.
And I think the other challenge too is on the business side, the business owners need to respect the rule and regulation.
Right.
And I think all too often in my career, acquisition people can get viewed as, the office of no.
Right.
No,
the roadblocks.
No, yeah. I was fortunate in the IRS. I got to work with some pretty high-performing acquisition people, Greg Rothwell, Jim Williams, who you well know. And, their attitude was, You know, we're here to serve you. We're here to serve the mission. We'll figure out a way. Now, don't come in and tell me you got to do it this way. Tell me what you want, and we'll figure out how to make the acquisition successful for you.
Hey, you know the other officer? No, that's the Office of General Counsel usually, right, in the government. But as spoken as someone who used to work in an Office of General Counsel. So, you know, one of the things I also wanted to touch a little bit about, because it goes to much of our conversation today and with regard to requirements development, is a couple of different things. And what that is, like the risk allocation in a contract and contract types, you know, that's generally driven by the requirements, right? Or,
well, I think some of it is actually driven by administration policy. And, you know, over the last 8 to 12 years, yeah, we've seen policy change. And, you know, when an administration comes in and says, well, I think everything should be firm fixed price, well, you know, I mean, agencies and departments and bureaus go, okay, we're going to now do that. And, you know, having sat now on both sides, it's, there are situations where firm fixed price is the right way to go for the government. And there are times when firm fixed price is not the right way to go for the government, because let's say it's a systems development and the requirements really aren't as defined as you would like them to be. And especially if you're moving into some new leading edge technology. And if you make that firm fixed price, it creates an environment between the vendor and the government that to me can become very confrontational. And awfully litigious, because everything becomes a change order.
Right.
You know, oh, I want to do this. Well, that's a change order. So, you know, to me, I've managed T&M contracts. You can manage T&M contracts to cost and schedule. You need to have good COTARs.
Right.
You need to be involved in the project, but you can manage it too. And I don't think that firm fixed price is the default to effectively managing the contract and the contractor that are providing the service.
Right. It really does boil down to the situation the agency is in, what the requirement is, and it is that, you know, and in managing to it, right? So that's what you're really saying, right? Managing that. It's not just the award.
It's the post-award, which, you know, sometimes, you know, we sort of say, okay, the contract's award, just, you know, let things go. Well, I think, Roger, you and I know from your GSA days, I mean, that's where all the trouble starts.
Right.
You know, it's not usually the award part, it's the implementation. And, you know, and again, it goes back to, you know, do you have the trained and certified contracting officers representatives? Do you have the team working and talking to each other?
Right. And, you know, to your point, it's one of those things that where, you know, the award of a contract, everybody focuses on the award because that's the sort of sexy part. It's like, oh, I've just selected you, and the from a company's perspective, it's, look, everybody, our shareholders, we just got another award, kind of thing. But that performance is a area that, you know, into your point further about diminishing resources, that's probably an area that's been more shortchanged than anything over the last, you know, several years.
I also think that, again, and I know, you know, I keep harping on it, but I think when you have that sort of multi-year strategy around procurements, you know, recognizing that there are, you know, there are policy goals and policy objectives, but I think if you sort of looked over this, you know, multi-year acquisition plan that supports your mission, you could say, yeah, in these set of contracts, the kinds of things that are being procured, yep, absolutely firm fixed price. These, you know, probably not. Maybe cost plus award fee, or, you know, time and material. And I think if you had that kind of planning and you brought it back to OMB, my sense is they'd see the rationale in that.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. Real quickly, another area seems to me sort of goes to requirements is low price, technically acceptable, LTPA. I get that. I can't even say that acronym. It gives me the willies. But what are you seeing in that area?
Well, I think that's, again, where organizations sort of react to policy direction. And
Or overreact.
Yeah. Underreact, or probably overreact. And, you know, I mean, there are commodities that are standardized, that are, you know, maybe off the shelf. And yeah, you know, as a consumer, as a individual, I'll buy something that is the lowest price. but I don't think I'm going to, you know, buy the lowest priced vendor for a new technology system, because you're looking for somebody who has experience, but also somebody who is going to be able to help you enhance your thinking around how do you really want to do business in the future.
Right.
And I think if you focus too much on just cost, you're not going
to
get that.
Right. And we have to do some business, Dave. So we do have to take the break right now. But when we come back, we'll be talking more with Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And we'll finish our discussion on acquisition planning and talk a little bit about small business opportunities. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And Dave, when I had to interrupt you to take the break so we could do some business, you were talking a little bit about low price, technically acceptable. I'll let you pick up on your thought there.
Sure. Thanks, Roger. I think it has its place depending on the kinds of procurements that are being done. But I don't think you move to that kind of solution when you're dealing with more sophisticated procurements. We talked earlier about, you know, firm fixed price and T&M, but also we seem to have sort of lost our way around best value. And I think especially around technology and big data, you know, we're talking about fields that are changing every single day.
Right.
And you want to have a vendor in there who has the experience with multiple situations that they can bring that to it. And sometimes, yes, they are a little bit more expensive,
right,
than the low bid. I remember, you know, when I began my government career, I had procurement under me in the regional office in New York. And, you know, back in the 70s, it was basically low bid.
Right.
You know, whatever the lowest bid was, that's who got it, whether they could perform or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think we have too many documented examples where we wind up, you know, doing low bid or the
it costs more in the long run, right?
And they wind up not being able to perform. The customer's not happy, they're not happy, and everybody loses all the way around.
Right, yeah. And on that happy note, well, let's turn to another area I know you're very passionate about and very interested in, that, and it's small business and opportunities for small business. And, first, I just, from big picture, why is it important to the government from your perspective, and now been on both sides?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the growth of the U.S. economy over the decades, I mean, clearly small business is one of the major drivers of the creation of jobs. And, you know, and you have the government, the U.S. government, as a major procurer. So, I mean, I think it's just logical that the government should be supporting what we know works. And that's, you know, small business. I actually, between the time I retired from the government and went to work for Booz Allen, I actually spent a year and a half with a small business. And that was a great experience in sort of understanding what some of their challenges are, because you have in the small business community, so I think, a spectrum of firms that, you know, want to grow and be a big business.
Right.
The firm that I was working with was a small business for years, and that's the owners of that firm wanted to stay a small business. They didn't want to get any bigger than 35 people. And they had a niche service that they provided to the government. And I think when you, again, think about what the government's trying to accomplish, I mean, the government is such a large procurer, you know, across defense and across the civilian agencies, that clearly we can drive that policy goal of helping small businesses and accomplish the agency mission, and not create an environment where you're saying everything needs to be set aside for a small business.
Right.
I mean, I started working with a lot of small businesses in the IRS, bringing small business in back in the mid-90s, And actually, a couple of these small businesses, actually, I still work with today in Booz Allen. I put them on my teams because they're very special providers of services, and mm-hmm. they're excellent. You mm-hmm. know, I know their quality. And I think, again, it's, you know, sometimes I think we get driven by just making a number. Let's, you know, we got a goal. We got to get this number done.
Right.
Check the box and move on. And again, I don't think that that is the most rational approach. I think we can accomplish the mission that's trying to be driven by the agency, the policy directive of growing small business and helping small business, and do that in the context of all the vendors in the community.
Right.
Not to the exclusion of any one of them.
Right. You know, the teaming you just mentioned is a key feature that I know Booz Allen Hamilton focuses on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We've done, you know, and I'm sort of patting myself on the back, but we started about 5 years ago in the civilian market that I work in, really focusing on a very definitive small business strategy. Because in the past, what happens in a lot of places is a procurement comes out, oh, there's a small business goal, and everybody rushes around to find a small business. You may or may not have ever worked with that company. You really are not quite sure the quality of what you're getting. And what we decided to do is really to build a strategy. And it took us a couple of years, but now we have a process and we have a full-time small business director who actually came from a small business and is passionate about it. Where, you know, we have, I think right now, probably in excess of 5,000 small businesses registered in our civilian market. And we use the Mentor Protégé program extensively. So we invite small businesses to come in and to participate in this program. And then we can actually then help them through the Mentor Protégé program, which has been great, but also sort of share them across the firm. So if I'm working with a small business, I have great success in a particular area, then I'm going to give them ratings in our system. And, you know, my colleagues in another market can say, hey, I need a small business to do this. You know, we've already had experience. We know they meet all of our standards and we can go use them. So it, to us, that's a win-win strategy.
Right. That's, I mean, sounds like some commercial best practices right there, Dave. Can you talk, and just to switch, have you seen any government best practices that, you know, that, you know, make sense in terms of promoting small business?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's you know, one in particular is the work that Treasury and IRS have done over the last, now probably 8, 9, 10, 12 years, through their TIPS program, which is their technology program, and on the recompete on the current set of procurements and awards, I mean, they basically have a nice mixture of large primes and small primes. And it really has allowed the community, the big primes and the smalls, to actually create multi-year relationships. You know, you get away from that, you know, I need to find somebody, I'll stand on the corner and see if a small business comes by, to, you know, this is a strategic alliance, you know, where we have small businesses that are part of our large business team, and we're a large business sub to a lot of the small businesses. And you know, I think, again, that sort of that partnership and that multi-year effort creates a better opportunity for the government.
Right. So in that case, the government created a framework that
absolutely
is
very effective.
Yeah. So, you know, we only got about a minute and a half left or so, and I like to add, you know, folks like you who've been, you know, both on both sides and have long distinguished careers in government service and as well as supporting government. You know, I like to ask some sort of big picture question. It's typically unfair, and you probably need a whole show to answer it, but, you know, based on your experience, you know, what were a couple of key drivers for that you could see or opportunities to create a more efficient and effective government? You know, you've done a lot of organizational work. You've done a lot of procurement work.
I mean, I think, Roger, we've talked about shared services, and I am, you know, an advocate of looking at shared services because, you know, the budgets aren't getting any bigger. They're getting smaller. You know, putting my government public servant hat on. We have a responsibility.
Or even your taxpayer hat on, right?
Taxpayer. Right. We have a responsibility to deliver quality services to the citizens of this country. And if I can save money through shared services or strategic sourcing and use that money to put into frontline programs that are going to impact the lives of American citizens, that's what we need to do.
Right. It's a great answer, Dave. Great answer. And I want to, and we're, hey, you timed it perfectly to the end of the show, obviously. So, but I want to thank my guest today, Dave Mader. Dave is a senior vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.